We are holding on page 94 in Sanhedrin, beginning Perek Sar Ramora Perek Shmini, Ois Kuftes. The first half of this Perek talks about the dinim of the Ben Sar Ramora. So one thing the Gemara establishes right at the beginning is that for a boy to be a Ben Sar Ramora, on the one hand, he has to be over by mitzvah, otherwise below that age, he's not chayiv and einshin. On the other hand, he can't be old enough that he could conceivably have a child of his own, or not even a born child, but even one in the womb. Because the pasuk says ki yil ish bein, which implies that he himself has to be a son and not that he's a potential father. So therefore, the Gemara derives from that that the whole time during which a boy could conceivably be a ben sar remota is 3 months, and the Gemara works out the details. So in that connection, it gets into the question. Now we talk about that a boy is only able to father a child from age 13 and on. On the other hand, we have all over the place in Halacha where a boy's bia is considered significant once he's age 9. So the Gemara goes and deals in some detail with that whole thing, and in the course of it, the Gemara mentions an opinion of Beis Shammai that actually even an 8-year-old boy is capable already of being mazriya. So the Gemara brings in this connection, Duras Harishonim Hayim Alidim Bnei Shmona Shanim. The Udiyu generations were in fact able to father children at the age of 8 years. So therefore, Beis Shammai says we can derive from that even in later times where that's not necessarily possible, nevertheless, the bia of an 8-year-old, says Beis Shammai, would have significance in halacha, whereas Beis Hillel says only 9 and older. So, Manolan Da'olid, where do we see that? In those generations, and when we talk about Duras HaRishonim, as we're going to see, the period during which we're talking about is going to be from the earliest example we're going to have is from the time of Avraham Avinu. The latest example we're going to have is from the time of David HaMelech. The Maharal actually has an explanation on it in a Sefer Be'er HaGoyla. Somebody had questioned this. He says, wait a minute, we find that, what do you mean Duras HaRishonim fathered children at such young ages? We see that the generations before the Mabul, many of them only had their first child well after age 100. So the Maharal answer is, before the Mabul is one thing. People lived exceptionally long lives, so people didn't need to have children so quickly, because one of the points of children is to populate the world, and as long as they're living, then that's less necessary. The Maharal, in fact, makes a point in that connection that usually the idea should be that a person should be getting married and starting to have children after about a quarter of his life. So nowadays, a person lives an average of 70, so therefore Ben Shmona Esther L'Chuppah, which is approximately a quarter of that. So he says, L'Mashal, the time of the August, the average age was somewhere around 160, give or take. And you see, for example, that Yitzchak got married at 40, and later on Esav copied that and also got married at 40. So there is that concept. But anyway. So he says the vote is
stipulation from that is that they need to have until 32 years old.
No, hold on. So the Maharal explains, this is before the Mabul is one thing. Before the Mabul, the world was on a completely different level, and people were on a completely different level, therefore they could be having children at much older. After the Mabul, he says, basically everything got scrambled up. And then the world was like in this unnatural state until the times of David HaMelech. In the times of David HaMelech, when we were preparing to build the Beis Mikdash, and especially when they actually built it in Shlomo's times, then things settled down to normal. So now you have that the youngest, that now you don't have that one quarter necessarily anymore. Like you said, people lived to a lot older than 32. But the point is, you also had, even though at that time, from after the Mabul, you still had sometimes people living hundreds of years. You see that the few generations after the Mabul lived a couple hundred years. Nevertheless, though, they were also able to have children at unnaturally early ages, even as early as 8. Then he says, after the time of David HaMelech, we don't find that anymore, because then already the world got in a more settled state. First of all, it's already half its existence is over. 6,000 years, that's 3,000 years, is not long after David's time. But second of all, at that point, the Beis Mikdash was prepared and built, and that brings a stability to the world. In a similar vein, by the way, there's a Medrash mentions something along the lines of that ever since the time of the Mabul, always the 40 days during which the original Mabul took place, from Yud Zayin Cheshvan until Chaf Zayin Kislev, when the original reigns of the Mabul fell, all the years from then on, for hundreds of years after that, there were always torrential rains and flooding rains during that time, until the first Beis Mikdash was built, and then things settled down. You don't have that kind of thing anymore. So we see that there was a certain instability in the world from the time of the Mabul until the first Beis Mikdash was built. Okay. So, Minolan de Oled, where do we see then that men were fathering children at age 8? Ilema Midichtiv, are you going to work it out based on as follows? When David finds out about Bathsheba, he says he asks who she is. Haloi zos Bathsheba bas Eliam. Isn't this Bathsheba the daughter of Eliam? Eshes Uriachiti, the wife of Uriachiti. So we see that Bathsheba's father was named Eliam. Now who is Eliam? Uchtiv Eliam ben Achitofel Hagiloni. We find among David's elite units in his army, lists over there about 30 people, and one of them is Eliam, the son of Achitophel Hagiloni. So we see that Eliam, the father of Bathsheba, was Achitophel's son. This is the same Achitophel who, as we're going to go on to say, was David's advisor and then turned against him during the rebellion of Avshalom. Now, let's work out the years. We find that after David married Bathsheba, so at first they had a child who passed away not long after that. This was part of the punishment for David for this whole matter with Bathsheba, the Navi tells him. But anyway, afterwards she became pregnant, and then afterwards she became pregnant again, and she had a baby that was Shlomo, and Vayishlach b'yad Nosan Anovi, and Hashem sent a message through Nosan Anovi, Vayikras Shmo Yedidya, and he called his name, besides for the name Shlomo, he's also called Yedidya Bavur Hashem, because of Hashem, in the printed in Yaakov, we have, and also in the printed Gemara, they have extra words added, Bavur Ki Hashem Ahavid, because Hashem loved him. That is the meaning of the Pasuk, but it doesn't actually say those words in it. Anyway, the point is, so now we're going to start a clock now from when Shlomo is born. And now we're going to calculate the dates of various events afterwards in the events of David's family. We're going to calculate them relative to Shlomo's age. And then we're going to work back and we're going to see Achitophel's age at the time, keeping in mind now that we've established that Achitophel was the father of Eliam, who was the father of Bathsheba, who was the mother of Shlomo, which means that Achitophel was Shlomo's great-grandfather. In fact, later on in the Masechta, we're going to learn one reason why Achitophel joined the rebellion against David is because he had a vision that Malchus was going to come from him. So he thought it meant that he himself is going to be the king. He didn't realize it means that his descendant, his great-grandson, is going to be the king of Shlomo. Anyway, so, Uchtiv, now right after that, right after Shlomo was born, then you have the story of Amnon and Tamar, which we learned about earlier in the Masechta, and then that was shortly, so Shlomo had just been born at the time. Now, shortly after that, so now what you have is the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says, Avshalom didn't even want to speak with Amnon. He wouldn't speak with him, he wouldn't speak to him good or bad, because he hated him for what he had done to Tamar. This is an example, by the way, where you have the importance of when the Torah says, if Avshalom had spoken out and told Amnon, how could you do such a thing, then they could have cleared the air between them. But instead he didn't, and it festered, and eventually he used his opportunity to kill Amnon. So Vayil goes to the Mav Shalom. The Pasuk says Shalom had people shearing his sheep, and he invited everybody to a party, and then while doing the party over there, he had his men assassinate Amnon. So now, 2 years, that means at this point Shlomo is 2 years old. The Pasuk now says, after he killed Amnon, then Avshalom ran away to Geshur, which is where his maternal grandfather lived there. Avshalom's mother, Avshalom and Tamar's mother, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, was Yifas Toyar, her name was Macha. She was the daughter of Talmai Melech Geshur. So now Avshalom ran off to his Zeda, the Goyish king of Geshur, and remained there for 3 years. So now, at this point, Shlomo is 5 years old. Uchtiv, then you have a whole story over there in Sefer Shmuel, how Yoav is worried about Avshalom, and David himself is starting to feel bad about him, so Yoav contrives a whole thing to get David to agree that Avshalom should come back to Yerushalayim. But the Pasuk says, Vayeshev Avshalom b'Yerushalayim shenasayim yamim, he stayed in Yerushalayim for 2 years, ufnei melech lo, and all that time he didn't see the king's face, David didn't want to see him. So now this brings us to Shlomo is 7 years old. Avshalom forced things with Yoav to basically blackmail him into taking him to see David, but nevertheless, David showed with his demeanor towards Avshalom that he doesn't really, he still was upset with him. In fact, the Pasuk says, Vayishak Kamelach L'Avshalom, that David kissed Avshalom, but the Meforshim point out, when he says that he kissed L'Avshalom, implies that he kissed him on the hand or on something else, not a kiss on the cheek, like you would to somebody that you really love. That showed Avshalom that David does not really like him after all, and that's when he decided, you know what, then I'm going to rebel against my father. Now remember, Shlomo, at this point, we've calculated is 7 years old. 2 years plus 2 years after Amnon and Tamar, 3 years that Avshalom had been out of town, and 2 years that he was back in Yerushalayim. Then the pasuk says, "Vayhi miketz arba'im shana." After 40 years have passed. Now, 40 years does not mean 40. It does not mean 40 years since the previous events. It means actually, the Gemara explains elsewhere, it means 40 years since the Jewish people had first asked for a king in the time of Shmuel, which was a few years before David became king. So it comes out this is like a David's 35th or 36th year as king. The point is, in other words, the pasuk wants to make a comparison. The same way then, as they did the wrong thing by asking a king, now they're doing the wrong thing by supporting Avshalom. So therefore, that's why the pasuk puts them together. So, Vayhimi Ketz Aboyim Shana, after 40 years, since they had first asked for a king in Shmuel's times, Vayomer Avshalom Alamelech, Avshalom says to the king, David, he needs an excuse to get out of Yerushalayim to start his rebellion. So he says, Elchana, let me please go, Vashalom es Nidri, Hashem Adarti L'Hashem B'Chevrin, let me pay off my neder that I made to Hashem, let me pay that off in Chevron. This is the period when you could bring korbanos anywhere, Bomer Samutr, the Beis Mikdash has not been built yet, and you could bring korbanos in Chevron, although the Gemara mentions elsewhere that really, so his excuse was that in Chevron, they have the best quality sheep for his korbanos. The Gemara explains that Avshalom was a Nazir Olam, and every year he had to bring korbanos for that, so now he's saying, I want to go to Chevron to get the best possible sheep for that. Anyway, while he was in Chevron, the real reason he went to Chevron, he went there with his supporters, and they started the rebellion over there. Now, again, this is all one, these last few things are one after the other, so Shlomo is 7 when Avshalom's revolt broke out. Now, the whole rebellion of Avshalom only lasted a few months. So you have, early on, Avshalom calls together his advisors. He has Achitofel. He also has over there Hushai Ha'arki, who, unbeknownst to him, is actually working as a double agent on behalf of David. And Avshalom asks them for their respective advice. Avshalom tells them we should take, Achitofel tells them we should right away take a strike force and catch David unawares and kill him. Avshalom says, maybe, I don't know, let's hear what Hushai has to say. Hushai has to tread very carefully not to blow his cover. He explains to Avshalom that's not such a good idea. David is going to be on the alert. You're not going to be able to take him by surprise so easily. What you got to do is you got to get the whole army together and go just overwhelm them with sheer numbers. And Avshalom, Vashdocha Protis, decides that Hushai's advice is the right one. Now, so the pasuk says, Achitofel raw ki lenesatzo. So Achitofel saw that his advice is not going to be followed, and he realized in that case the whole revolt is going to collapse, and he's going to be in trouble as a murdered b'malchus. By Yachvish, so we learned about this in Bava. We learned about this in Bava Basra a month or two back. By Yachvish as a chamer. So he saddled his donkey. He went to his house, to his city. He gave last instructions to his family. In Bava Basra, we learned about what those instructions were. And then he strangled himself. He committed suicide, partially because he realized that otherwise he's going to be judged as a murdered b'malchus. Now, so it comes out then, it comes out when Shlomo was 7, his great-grandfather, Achitofel, had committed suicide. Now, how old was Achitofel at the time? Ochtim. Now, the passage says, Anshei domo mirmo lo yechzi yimeihem, men of blood and deceitfulness will not live out half their days, which means, in other words, since an average person's lifetime is 70, yimeishin esen behem shim shana, then David is davening that such people of blood, which is doig, and mirma, and deceitfulness, which is Achitofel, lo yechzu yimeihem, they should not live out half their lives. So they should not live to be 35 years old even. By the way, Ion Yaakov points out, you know, usually we haven't picked it up as ben chamishim la'etza, but here Achitofel's advice, the pasuk says, was so reliable, kasher yishal ishu b'dvaro ha'lekim, it was like asking the Urim v'Tumim, that he was able to give it, he was capable of giving advice at a much younger age. He never made it to anywhere near 50. So, Vitanya, we learn in Brisa, Kol Shnosef Shol Doyeg Enim Elalama Dalad. Altogether, Doyeg, David's enemy from earlier times, from Shaul's times, lived to be only 34. So, David's curse was Mekoyim, and he didn't make it to 35. V'shal Achitofel Enim Elalama Gimel. Achitofel made it to only 33. Yad Ramah points out, because he committed suicide, had he not, he would have lived another year. Anyway, the point is, so now we've established that Achitofel, Shlomo's great-grandfather, was 33 at the time when Shlomo is 7. Now, let's work it out. Kama havin l'ru, so how much do you have? So Achitofel, at that point, is 33 years old. Dal sheva davar Shlomo, subtract, at this point, Shlomo is 7 years old. Poshlehu esrim meshis, that leaves you 26 years to work with. How do we divide the 26 among the 3 generations? Dal tauti shmi v'tlosa iburi. You have to subtract now 2 years to cover the 3 pregnancies. Rashi points out, now, a pregnancy is, conceivably can be only 7 months. You don't have to have that. A pregnancy is going to be a full 9 months. We find all over Shas, a baby is, can be born perfectly viable after 6 months and change. So therefore, that's say 7 months. But Rashi says you also need a month in between for nidus and for the woman to become tahor. So therefore, altogether, it takes approximately the minimum you're going to have between one baby and the next is going to be approximately 8 months. So 8 times 3, because you have to have from Achi Tofel to Aliyam, from Aliyam to Bastreva, and from Bastreva to Shloima, is each time you're going to have 8 months. So 8 times 3 is 24, which is 2 years. So the 3 pregnancies can cover a period of 2 years. So that means, in other words, subtract 2 from the 26, we're left with 24. Divide that by the 3 generations. So it comes out, each one of these generations fathered or mothered their child when they were 8. So it would come out, in other words, that Achitofel fathered Eliam when he was 8, and then Eliam to Bathsheba, and then Bathsheba to Shloima, each one of them when they were 8, it would come out. So therefore, that would be. So now Bathsheba is saying, we see that in Dota Seder Shoyin, we see that in the earlier generations, such a thing was possible, and therefore Bathsheba says we can use that as a precedent in Halacha, even for later times, that an 8-year-old boy's Bia is already considered something significant. However, the Gemara asked me, Mai, who said that that's the correct way of dividing up the years? Maybe the 2 men over here, Achitofel and Eliam, each fathered their children when they were 9, which fine, even Basil agrees that 9 is already considered, via is considered via, or Bathsheba Oled Bishis. Meanwhile, Bathsheba would have conceived Shloima when she was 6. After all, a woman has greater capacity as far as that. Women's bodies mature earlier than boys. We know now that's why, for example, a girl becomes bas mitzvah at 12, a boy becomes bar mitzvah at 13. So here, you could still work it out, 8, 8, and 6. So she can have children at younger ages. Teda, and after all, you can show. After all, you're also not considering the Hahavyal of Vlad Meikra. After all, she had a baby beforehand, because again, when David first brought her to the palace and had relations with her, and then she tells David, I'm pregnant, that baby was born perfectly healthy afterwards. But the Navi Nosson tells David that part of your punishment for having done this, taking Bathsheba in this unusual way. Okay, it's not technically also Al Pi Halacha, because cases get Chris's Lishta, and all that. Nevertheless, it made a Chil Hashem. So Nosson Anovi tells him part of your punishment is going to be that this baby is going to die, and only after that did she become pregnant and have Shloima. So anyway, as it is, so even if you were to say that you're dividing up the years evenly, as it is, you have to say that Bathsheba had a baby at a younger age than her father and grandfather. So once you do, then why can't you equally well say that the 2 men were 9 and she was at even a younger age? So you have no proof from there necessarily that a man can father a child at 8 years old. Okay. The Gemara says, Elamei Hocha. Fine. Rather, we'll try to prove it from as follows. The Torah tells us about Terach's children. The Eva told us Terach. These are the descendants of Terach. Terach holds Avram as Nochor v'Esfaron. At this point, the Gemara is assuming that they're listed in age order. Now, so therefore, Avram Godom Minochor Shana, the Nochor Godom Minhoran Shana. Now, Avram would be a year older than Nochor, and Nochor a year older than Horon. Now, one way of looking at it is, why over here are we allotting a year for each pregnancy when before we only allotted 8 months? So Marsha points out that after all, you know, before we were talking about different generations. We're talking about Achitofel's wife and then Eliam's wife and then Bathsheba. So therefore, so we can talk about for each one, you have a much shorter amount of time over here. Here we're talking about the Pashkas Terach only had the 1 wife that he has 3 children from, and therefore you need, therefore, and you're not going to have, she's not going to become pregnant so fast after the previous one, and therefore you need to allot, a full year for each one to give her time to recover between one pregnancy and the next. Although Marshall goes on to say that the rest of what the Gemara is going to talk about this doesn't necessarily agree with that, maybe even it could be that we're not saying a full year, we're just kind of rounding. The Yad Ramah also says maybe we're saying like before we could talk about 8 months to cover a short pregnancy plus a month of nidus and then tara in between. But fine, you could say that then we're rounding up once we have two like that would be over a year, and therefore already we can round it off and call it 2 years. Anyway. So now, Nimsa Avram Godol Shtei Shana Mehoran. So it comes out, if we look at it that way, that Avraham is 2 years older than Haran. Now, Avram and Nachor lahem noshim b'lema. Now, the pasuk goes on to say that Avram and Nachor both married wives. Nachor married Milcah, and Avram married Sarah, Sarai at that time, and Nachor married Milcah. Now, the pasuk describes, the pasuk says they were both daughters of Haran, who was the father of Milcah and the father of Yiscah. An interesting thing, by the way, that comes out of this, you know, Haran himself, we have in the pasuk, he died on Pnei Terach Aviv. We know the whole story that after Avram was thrown in the fiery furnace, he had came out alive, then he also said, I'm on Avram's side, and they threw him in, and he burnt up. I saw once somebody pointed out a vert that when you get down to it, Haran has this chus, though, that all the Imois are his descendants. Sarah is his daughter. Rivka is his granddaughter through Milcah. Milcah was the wife of Nachor, and Rivka is their daughter. And Rachel and Leah are the next generation. They're Lavan's daughters. So all of them, in fact, descend from Haran. Anyway, the point is that the pasuk says that Avram and Nachor both married daughters of Haran, and the pasuk says that Haran was the father of Milcah and the father of Yiscah. Now, who is Yiscah? V'amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Yiscah zu Sarah. So Rabbi Yitzchak says, Yiscah, you should know, is another name for Sarah. V'loma nikra shma Yiscah. Why is she called Yiscah? First of all, so for two reasons. Number one, she's soicha b'Ruach HaKodesh, because she could gaze with Ruach HaKodesh. She's one of the seven Nevi'ahs in Jewish history. So therefore, Yiscah, m'loshen socha, that she could look with, that she could look with Ruach HaKodesh. Thus we find later on, Hashem tells Avram, Koila shekema elecha Sarah, shema b'koila. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her, because her degree of nevuah is greater than yours. And we find, in fact, that when Avram gets the news another reason for the name Yiscah is everybody would gaze at her beauty. The Gemara also tells us elsewhere that she was one of the four most beautiful women who ever lived. Mefarshim make an interesting point on that. Sav Sofer talks about an idea that those two things go together. Sometimes you have a person is very beautiful and they tend to be very vain about their looks. With Sarah, it was the other way around. The fact that she was very beautiful didn't go to her head, and she still retained her tzidkus, and she was zoicha to Ruach HaKodesh and to Nevuah. Another way of looking at it is sometimes you have certain people where the ruchnius of them shines through on their face, and Sarah was an example of that. So these two explanations go together. The point of that is, in other words, now why do we need to know for this purpose who Yiscah is? One thing is, it helps us explain why it says that Avram married Yiscah before it says that Nachor married Milcah. Why does it say that Avram married Sarai? If the pasuk then says that Haran was the father of Milcah and the father of Yiscah, if Milcah is older, why isn't she getting married first? So now we would explain that it means Yiscah is actually Sarah, and she's called that. In distinction, it doesn't mean that she's younger than Milcah. She may in fact have been older. And Avram, as the elder brother, as we're saying now, married her first. Anyway, when Avraham is told by Hashem that he's going to have that he and Sarah are going to have a son, he fell on his face and his lap, and he said in his heart, how could it be? I'm going to be 100, Sarah is going to be 90. So we see that Sarah was 10 years younger than Avraham. Kama koshish Avraham is Sarah es shnin. So we see that Avraham is 10 years older than Sarah. The koshish ma'avur, tautin shin. Now we also see, as we've been saying, that Avram is 2 years older than Haran. Ishtakach ki older Haran l'sara v'tamni older. So it comes out that Haran fathered Sarah when he was 8. So there you go. There would be a source that in Doris that is shown him in the period after the Mabel that it was possible for a man, for a boy, to be able to father a daughter at age 8 years old. However, the Gemara says, Mimai, who says that that's a valid proof? Dilma Avram zuta da'chu ahava. Maybe in fact, Avraham was the youngest of the brothers, and therefore, yes, Sarah is 10 years younger than him, but that doesn't mean that Haran necessarily fathered her at 8. In fact, the Torah might be listing them in the order of their chachma. In other words, Avraham, being the greatest chacham among them, gets to be listed first, even though he was maybe actually the youngest brother. So. Teda, in fact, you can prove that. You can prove from a different example that the Torah lists brothers in the order of their chokhmah and not the order of their age. The pasuk says, when Noach was 500 years old, then Noach fathered Shem, Chom, and Yafes. Now, on the face of it, would that mean that if listing them in age order, Shem Godol Mecham Shana, it would have to mean that Shem is a year older than Chom, V'Chom Godol Meyefes Shana, and then Chom would be a year older than Yefes. The problem is, so in that case, Nimtza Shem Godol Meyefes Beis Shanim, it would mean that Shem is 2 years older than Yefes. The problem is, V'Noyach Ben Sheshmei Eschana, V'Amabel Hoya Mayim Al Ha'aretz. The Pasuk says that Noyach was 600 years old when the Mabel started. Uchtiv, later on, the Pasuk says, V'Ela told us Shem, Shem Ben Ma'as Shana, that Shem when he was 100 years old, by Yodas Apashad, then he fathered Apashad, Shnasayim Achar Mabul, 2 years after the Mabul. So it comes out, he turned 100 only 2 years after the Mabul. Then Kuf Shana, what do you mean he's only 100? By Mevatarkin Shinin Haba. According to what we're saying, if Shem was the oldest, he would have been 102 2 years after the Mabul, because he would have been born when Noach was 500, he would have been Noach's eldest, so he would have been 100 when the Mabul started. 2 years later, he would have been 102. And the Pasuk is telling us that no, he was 100. Ela Derech Chochmasim Kachosh of Lahu. Obviously, therefore, the Pasuk is listing them in the order of their Chochmah. Shem, being the greatest Chocham, then he gets listed first, even though, in fact, he was the youngest. So we would have to say that Chom, or Yefes, was born first, and Shem was born only 2 years later. And therefore, so Shem was born 98 years before the Mabul, and then comes the Mabul, and then 2 years later, he turns 100. So you see it's listing them in that case in the order of their chokhmah. Hachanami, the same thing Abraham's brother and his brothers, derech chokhmasim kachosh of lehu, it can very well be listing them in the order of their chokhmah and not the order of their age. So you have no proof that in fact Avram was 2 years older than Haran. And in fact, Amar Rav Kahana, Amrit L'Shmaita, Kameh de Rav Zvid Min HaHavdah. Rav Kahana says, in fact, I told over this whole discussion to Rav Zvid Min HaHavdah. Omar, he says, Atun Mehocha Mas Nisula, you're deriving it from there that Shem cannot have been the eldest brother. Anan Mehocha Mas Ninula. We actually have a different pasuk that we derive the same point from. And later on, in Parshas Noach, when it lists the descendants of all the brothers, it says, first it lists the descendants of Yefes, then Chom, and then it says, L'Shem Yulat Gamhu, to Shem they were also born, the following descendants, Shem, you should know, is the father of all Bnei Aver, all those who live on the other side of the river, which is where Avram came from, and so forth. Achi Yefes HaGadol, the brother of Yefes, who was the eldest. Meaning, Yefes HaGadol Shebechav Hava, so Yefes was actually the eldest of his brothers. So you see from that, therefore, that just because it always lists Shem, Chom, and Yefes, Shem was not, in fact, the oldest. So why is it listed that way? So we said Derech Chochmasan. Now, Tosfos wonders in that case, then why isn't Chom listed last? So there's different answers for it. One of them being that maybe, in fact, the order may have been Yefes Chom Shem, like they're listed later on in Parshas Noach by their descendants. So fine, we put Shem first because, therefore, like maybe we're putting them in reverse order, kind of Shem, Chom, and then Yefes. Another point is we're putting Shem, then his opposite extreme, which is Chom, and then we're putting Yefes, who's kind of in between. With that said, Maharsha discusses over here based on various Mephoshim. There are, in fact, different opinions in the Medrash and all. And in fact, which one was the eldest? Another relevant thing over here is you have when Knan does what he does to Avraham, which we're going to talk about a little further in our parak. Then the pasuk says that Noach woke up and he realized what Bnoi HaKotan had done to him, his young son. So on the face of it, that would mean Chom is the youngest. On the other hand, though, Rashi brings on the pasuk that Hakotan means apostle v'habozri, the one who's apostle and degraded. So not necessarily does that mean that Chom was in fact the youngest. So here the Gemara is taking it that we could say that we would have to say the order was Yefes Chom Shem, but in fact there are different opinions on that subject based on different psukim and based on different midrashim and things like that. Okay, in any case, the point is that with Avraham and his brothers, we have no proof to say that Avraham was the eldest. He may, in fact, have been a younger one, and therefore there's no proof about him and Haran's relative ages. With that said, though, Seder Olam, Taka takes it as a given, so we'll continue this discussion tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, but Seder Olam, Taka does take it as a given that Avraham was the eldest brother, and it uses that to calculate the years. If we calculate the years of who was born, this one fathered a son by this age, this one by that age, etc., we come down to Terach was born in the year 1878 after creation, and Avraham was born in the year 1948. We wouldn't have that according to our Gemara, because according to our Gemara, in fact, Avraham would have been born a couple of years later. All right. Turning now to Masechta Midos, we begin the third parak. We're going to focus now on the structure of the Mizbeach. So the Mishnah says, HaMizbeach HaYashloshim U'Shtayim Al Shloshim U'Shal Lamed Beis. The Mizbeach was 32 by 32 Amos. And what we mean is the base of it, the Yisoid, was a maximum of 32 Amos in each direction. As we're going to go on to see soon, it didn't surround the Mizbeach on all sides, but the maximum extent of it in any direction was 32 Amos. So here's how it went. So here you have the top view of it, and here you have the 3D view of it. Ola Amma Vakonas Amma, the first thing is it goes up from the floor, one Amma, and then it indents one Amma. Zeha Yisoid, that would be the Yisoid. The way that the Gemara explains it in Zvachim, and the Rambam brings it in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, what they did is they put together a wooden frame, 32 by 32 Amos. They put an L-shaped piece inside it to block out the part that's not going to be the Yisoid, because as we'll talk about soon, the Yisoid did not surround them as there, only on two sides, so they put in a piece of wood to block, and then they poured in basically a mixture kind of like concrete. The Gemara mentions it contained tar and little and gravel and lead and whatever, and that they made a piece one amma 32 by 32 and one amma high. That became the Yisoid. Now, then you have the next piece on top of it is going to be indented one amma on every side. Nimsus shloshim al shloshim. So now it comes out. Then the next piece above it is going to be 30 by 30. Ola chomesh v'konis amma. It goes up from there five ammas, and then it also indents one amma. Zeha soiviv, that indent of one amma is the soiviv, that is the ledge that the Kohenim would walk around the Mizbeach when they're doing, in particular, when they do the blood of a chattas. When we have an Ezer Mekoyman, Olav HaKevish, Ufana L'Soiviv, Uvala L'Kem, Dremis Mizrachis, Mizrachis Tzvonis, etc., that was, he would be walking around the soiviv, which is a little more than halfway up the Mizbeach.
It's actually very large.
It is fairly narrow, it's only one amma wide, yeah. The one with Foshim at that fit. Yeah, I mean, I guess they could hold on to the side of the Mizbeach, but the Tiferes Yisrael, I think, learns that there was actually a little bit sticking up by the side of it to keep the Kohenim from slipping off. But yeah, still means they have to be pretty nimble-footed, yeah. Next, Nimsa Chofches Al Chofches. Now, from the soiviv and upward, you have 28 by 28. Again, what they do is, so again, they started with a wooden form to make the soiviv, 32 by 32. Then, once that dried, they would put on top of it another one, 30 by 30, and five amas tall, and pour the mixture into there to make the part up until the soiviv. Then they would put another piece, another form, another wooden frame, 28 by 28, and use that to cast the rest of the next three amas of the height of them as Mizbeach. So therefore, that brings you to the top of the Mizbeach. Now you have everything except for the Kronos. Next.
28, then there should be two Amas of the Soiviv.
No, there's one Amma on each side. The Soiviv is one Amma on each side. So you have 30 by 30, and then it indents one Amma on each side, so you're left with 28 by 28. Strictly, the Gemara actually explains in Menachos that some of these Amas were actually smaller Amas than normal, 5 Tvachim instead of 6. So that's strictly speaking, when we say, for example, 30 Amas, it's really actually 30 Amas and 2 Tvachim, and it's really 28 Amas and 4 Tvachim. So the Gemara explains the mission over here is not telling us the Tvachim, just the Amas. Next, Mokma Kronos Amma Mizeh Amma Mizeh. The four Kronos, the four horns of the Mizbeach, each of them is an Amma by an Amma. So once you subtract them and a strip that goes between them, Nimsa Chavvav Al Chavvav, then you have 26 by 26 for the main part of the top of the Mizbeach. Mokim Hiluch Ragle Akoinim, then you have, within that is an area, an Amma wide, for the Kohenim to be able to walk around. The Kohenim have to be able to walk around the top of the Mizbeach, to set up the wood, and to put the Evarim on the fire, and to be able to rake up the ashes, and so forth. So they need a walkway for that. They can't walk from one Keren to the next along the edge, because the Kronos are each an Amma by an Amma by an Amma, and they trip over them. So therefore, they had to have a walkway, a strip within that, not blocked by the Kronos, which is one by one. Nimsach of Dalad Ach of Dalad, Mekoyim HaMa'arocha. Therefore, it comes out the area that's available for wood piles for the Mizbeach is 24 by 24. Within that, they didn't have one big wood pile. They had several small ones, the Macholikas and the Mishnah and Yoma, whether year-round there were two, three, or four, and everybody agrees that on Yom Kippur, there was one extra one to burn the Ketores, to take coals for the Ketores of Yom Kippur. So you have 24 by 24, the Mekoyim HaMa'arocha. Rabbi Yossi says, you should know, in the first Beis Mikdash, the Mizbeach was smaller. The base of it, the Yisoid, was only 28 by 28 instead of 32 by 32. It started going up level by level like that, the same way one Amma indent for the Yisoid, one Amma indent for the Soviv, one Amma indent for the Kronos, etc. So in the first Beis Mikdash, the area of the Ma'arocha was 20 by 20. And in fact, the Pasuk in Divrei Yomim says that he built the Mizbeach 20 by 20 amas. So that means the Mokam HaMarocha, the actual area on the top of the Mizbeach that was available for wood piles and fires and all that, was 20 by 20. Uchsho'olu b'nei Agola. Now, when the Yidden came up from the Gola, from Bavel, to build the second Beis Mikdash, Hosifu olav arba amas minat sofen, v'dalav amas minam, or adorim, it says on the side, v'dalav amas minam marev k'migama. Then they added an L-shaped thing to the Beis Mikdash to make it larger. They added on two sides, here in printed Mishnah in front of us, it says on the north and on the west, but it says on the side, it should actually be on the south and on the west. So they added four amas on the south, which is over here, and four on the west, which is over here, and thereby they made the square larger. The Mizbeach has to be a square. That's one of the things that's active with the Mizbeach. So they added four amas on. Why they have to add? So the Gemara explains. So the Gemara explains in the like this. You have in the southwest corner of the Mizbeach is where they pour the wine. Is where they pour the wine for the Nesachim, and on Sukkot also the water for Nisach HaMayim. Now in the first Beis Mikdash, what would happen is those would then flow down the side of the Mizbeach on the outside, and they would go into the Shisin, into the underground drainage over there. In the first Beis Mikdash, they held that's how it should be. In the second Beis Mikdash, the Gemara explains, they douse in the Psukim differently and realize that the Nisuch HaMayim and Nisuch HaYayin should actually take place within the Mizbeach and not on the side of it. So now they had to make it larger in order that area of the Shisin would now be included within the actual footprint of the Mizbeach, and you have the two bowls that are built into the top of the Mizbeach that are described in Mishnah Sukkah, where then there would be channels going through from them to go down to the Shisin. So that's why they added on those sides. We find Yechezkel describes the third Beis Mikdash. Now the Mizbeach they built in the second Beis Mikdash is almost identical to what he describes. He says Shenema b'ha Ariel, the Ariel, Ariel literally means the lion of Hashem, so it means the top of the Mizbeach where the fire that was shaped like a lion was burning. Yud Beis Odach v'shtem esrei reichav, it was 12 long by 12 wide, Ravua square. Now Yochel she'enu yalei Yud Beis al Yud Beis, it sounds like Yechezkel was saying that the Makom HaMarocha is only 12 by 12. No, sure, I mean, ala basra. But he continues and says, to its four quadrants. That means Malamad Shemin Emtzah who murdered Yud Beis Amma, the whole Ruach, means Yechezkel is telling us, from the midpoint of the Mizbeach, measure out 12 Amas in each direction. So 12 here. 12 here makes 24. What? That's the Chachamim of the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash, the Nevi'im who were there. The Gemara mentions that there were three Nevi'im with them. One of them told them the actual place of the Mizbeach. The other one told them the size of it, the dimensions of it, and the third one told them that they can be Makriv Korbanos even before they build it. Yechezkel is saying 12 by 12, which really means 24 by 24, namely 12 measuring from the middle in each direction. Malamachim and Enso murdered Yud Beis Amma l'chol ruach, so you'd measure 12 amas in each direction from the midpoint. So therefore, that's 24 by 24. And then once you add the place, the walkway for the Kohenim and the Kronos and the Soviv and the Yisoid, then you wind up with 32 by 32, like we said before. Next, the Mishnah continues. V'chut shal sikra chogre be'emsa. In the middle of the Mizbeach, at the midpoint of the height of the Mizbeach, there was a red line painted around it. It was one amma below the Soviv. La'havdo ben adomim ha'yonim le'domim ha'tachtonim. To distinguish between the upper blood and the lower blood. Certain korbanos you have to have the blood has to be put on the top half of the Mizbeach. Achmatas behema and ola sa'oif. Certain ones have to go dafka on the bottom half of the Mizbeach. All other korbanos, the behema and the chatas, the oif, have to go on the bottom half. So they have to have a line in the middle to distinguish so you know which one is above and which one is below. The Yisoid went along the entire northern side of the Mizbeach and the entire western side, and then it would consume one amma towards the south and one amma towards the east. Meaning, there's different mephoshim, understand. Doesn't mean it just stuck out one amma. Doesn't mean it actually wrapped around the corner. Or does it mean it actually went almost until this corner, but didn't quite touch the corner? The Gemara in Zvachim explains that basically basically there was a the line between the borders of Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin ran right along the Mizbeach, and the Mizbeach had to be completely built within the territory of Binyamin, so therefore wherever it was in the territory of Yehuda could not have Yisod. There was an opinion in the Gemara over there that it had a physical Yisod. It just doesn't have the dinim of Yisod. But anyway, the Zohar says an interesting idea about it. The Zohar says that it also has to do with the fact Yosef is related to the Sphira of Yisod. He represents the Sphira of Yisod. So therefore, the Yisod in the Mizbeach could only be on the side of those Shvatim so you have the west side in the Midbar. Who camped on the west side? Yosef's own sons, Menashe and Ephraim, and Binyamin, who was his full brother. They loved him. So there's no problem with there being a Yisod there. Then on the south, who camped on the south? Reuben, Shimon, and God. Now, Reuben tried to save Yosef. God, at least, was... the north. Who camped on the north was Don, Osher, and Naphtali. They were all children of the Shvachas, of Bilhah and Zilpah. They didn't love Yosef, but they didn't hate him so much either. Therefore, there could be Yisod there. Now, sticking out a little bit towards the south, which is where you have Reuben, Shimon, and God, because Reuben did try to save him, and sticking out a little bit towards the east, where Yehuda camps, because Yehuda also tried to save him. Therefore, there can be a tiny bit of Yisod on that side.
God.
So God is again. God is. I mean, once you have Reuben there, then fine. I mean, you have Shimon in particular, really hated Yosef, as we talked about yesterday. Therefore, there really couldn't be a story there, but there could be a tiny bit in recognition of Reuben. Yom Yom Mashiach Gula, Chavches Tammuz. The Zohar tells us that the first and second Beis Hamikdash are Binyana de Barnach. They were created, they were built by human beings, so it has no kiyum at all, whereas the third Beis Hamikdash is Binyana de Kodesh Barichu and will last forever. Now, the first Beis Hamikdash corresponds to Avraham, the second to Yitzchak, the third to Yaakov. Yaakov's midah is Emes, and Emes means that there's never any hefsek and any shinui, which is why the third Beis Hamikdash will last forever. Let's see if we can knock off a very quick halacha. It's good to, when you put on your tzitzis, or your talis, you should look at the tzitzis when you're making the bracha on them, or is chartem, because seeing them brings to remembering, and remembering brings to actually doing the mitzvahs.